One thing I wanted to, you know, I just thought of it. I wanted to encourage the people from New York, the people who are here from the centers in, you know, ACI centers. Nepal is probably the only place you can get all your personal practice things that you need. You won't find them in the monasteries in the south of India. And I don't know what's available in Bodh Gaya, but you won't find anything like the quality that you find in Nepal. Okay, just so I'm going to make a little list of things I encourage you to go out and find. I think Sunday you have an off day if you're flying on the same flight. And Losang Yorube. Losang? Yamanawa. Okay, huh? There's a Pabongkwa Rinpoche's attendant. Pabongkwa Rinpoche is in Tibet right now. Pabongkwa Rinpoche number 3, okay? And he's a. We're from the same house in the monastery, but his attendants are still here, and they've been very helpful for me to get things that I need. So if you need help, talk to Pelma, and she'll hook you up with them if you need her. You know, they don't sell things, but they can take you to stores and help you bargain and stuff like that, you know. So I'll just mention some things that I would get if I were you, because you can't get them anywhere else, okay? If you don't have a mandala, you should get one. You know, the plate and the rings, okay? So you need plate, rings, and what we call tok. Tok is the thing on the top, the little thing you stick on the top, all right? So you won't find it anywhere, okay? They're hard to get. They don't have them in the monasteries in South India, okay? I would get, if you're practicing Tantra, I'd get a bell and a dorje, okay? Dorje, bell. And a damaru drum, okay. And the drum, try to get one that's, you know, in our tradition, we don't use these big, they call Ngakpa drums, like this big, okay. Like in the Gyumen Tantric College tradition, which is what we're lineage, people from ACI are, small is best, and it's supposed to be like secret, you know. So when you ring it, you do it here, and you ring it, okay, everything should be small. Like, get those little tiny, you know, the ones about this big. Make sure the skin is tight, because they're possible to tighten later, okay? They don't sound real sharp. It's going to get worse when you hit the U.S., because there's more humidity. And there should be dacha, they call it dacha. You know, there's like a silk thing on that helps you hold it. Don't just buy the thing without the thing hanging off it, all right? If you're practicing properly, brass skull cup or something. Okay, we don't traditionally use the big hairy ones from a real person. I think you might have some trouble getting in the U.S. too, but it's not unacceptable. If you really think it would help your practice, that's fine. You know, but traditionally it's a small one like that. And if you're practicing Vajrayogini, it should be a triangular holder for it. Under it, okay? That's a tradition, okay? When you do the Nangche Dubya, you're visualizing that, so it helps you, okay, like that. What other stuff?
Water bowl,
yeah. And then, whatever you like. You know, the scriptures say the best you can afford, okay? That's why I use clay. But without feeling attached to them, you see what I mean? So, you know, I like the white metal. They're called white metal. They call them li, I think, in Tibetan. But there's a white metal that's very cheap, and it stays clean, and it's nice, okay? Sorry? Kata?
Yeah.
Yeah, katas are nice to have. They're hard to find. You're going to need them in Bodh Gaya. You're going to run into all these big lamas. Okay. Anything? Oh, the covers are nice to have. A damaru drum cover is nice to have, because they tend to get broken in your luggage or just like that. Anything? Butter lamps are nice to have. Okay. If you're going to be doing lerung, okay, Vajrayogini lerung, then you should also have a bumpa, okay? And that's your problem. You have to find a bumpa. In each of the major retreat centers, like Arizona, Godstone, New York, all we have already the instruments you need for fire offering. So you don't have to worry too much about that. If you're going to be out on your own doing Rerungs and you won't be at one of those centers, you might want to get the, it's called Kansa and Lu for the fire offering. Those two long things, that those are impossible to find anywhere else. I found one in Delhi in the last 20 years. So if you need one, you should get one of those. Anything else you guys can think of? No. Ellie says you can check, you can try Bodhinath. Also images, you know, you won't find images of the quality you find in Nepal. You just won't find them. So if you're into statues or tankas, it's good to get them here. The tradition is top notch. Okay. Rinpoche is very sticky about it. that's all right. That's just advice, because I've tried for years to find them in Delhi. And you know, you think you're going to a monastery with 10,000 monks there, and there's nothing. Okay. Oh, a nice malas, if you can find rosaries. Okay. Today we're going to talk about an interesting thing. Do Buddhas collect karma to become Buddhas? What do you guess? Yes. I mean, you'd say, yeah, they have to do good stuff, and that puts good seeds in their minds, and then when they look at the same five sticks that you look at, they see a Buddha's arm forced to do so by their past karma, okay? And you would think that. Now, technically speaking, in the scriptures, once you're collecting karma intelligently, we don't call it karma anymore. Just for your information. In the Abhidharma system, they still call it karma, but in the higher systems, they don't call it that anymore. It actually changes names. It's called Sok. Those of you who know, like, Sok days, or the calendar say Tsog or something. Are the shops open on Sunday around?
Yes. Not Saturday. Yeah.
Not Saturday, but
not
on Sunday.
Saturday.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sunday, that's good. So I think you can get most of your stuff on Sunday. Say tsok. So tsok means a collection of any kind, you know. In tantric ritual, it means a collection of offerings and something like that. In the study of karma, it means the collection of pure karma that you need to become a Buddha. And we don't call it karma, we don't call it lay anymore, we call it tsok. Okay? Tsok. And there's two kinds. First is called Sunam. Say Sunam.
Sunam.
It's a common Tibetan name, right? Sonam or something, okay? Sunam means the good karma that a person collects that is going to create their physical body, the physical Buddhist body, okay? And there are two bodies that a Buddha has, okay? Two physical bodies. One is what we call sambhogakaya, or enjoyment body, and that's their beautiful body that hangs out in their paradise. Okay, that's like their home base, physically. Okay, they have this beautiful, that's what you see in tanka paintings, okay, normally. That's the paradise body. Okay, you can call it paradise body. Then there's the, what we call tukku, which is emanation body. That's the one they send out on missions, okay? That's the one. They might have a million missions going on at the same time on different planets, or on this planet, or in one county in Iowa at the same time, okay? And they send out those bodies, and those bodies appear on those planets, and they help people, okay? And those can be Tuku is like unbelievable. They can do anything. Like, they're not limited even to a human form. They could be animals, they could be birds, and they're not even limited to animate forms. They could, it's very typical for a Buddha to emanate as the wind going through the trees, or the sound of the ocean waves, or something like that. Like, you're in a certain mood, and you go to the beach, and the Buddha wants to teach you something, and they will emanate as a certain sound of the waves, or certain sound of the wind going through the trees. And that's very, that's a tuku. They do that, okay? So technically, every tuku you met, you know, when you call some person a tuku in a monastery, that means they are believed to be an emanation of a holy being. People say, oh, could you have tuku? There's this big fight. Could there be two Panchen Lamas going on at the same time? Of course, there could be a million going on at the same time. You know what I mean? So that movie Little Buddha was right, okay? All right? That's what a tuku really is. That's what tuku means. So those are the two physical bodies that are made. Oh, I wanted to point out one thing. They don't have to think for the tukus to go out. They're called Thundup. Lama Thundup's name means spontaneous. Okay? There's no premeditation. They just show up where somebody needs them. So it's not like they're sitting there with a big computer up in their paradise trying to keep track of all their tukus and what they're up to in different countries and stuff like that. If there's a person that would be benefited on a subway in New York at 4 a.m. to get bumped on the head by somebody else just going up the stairs, then a tuku will appear there. Okay? If that person has what we call kelwa, if that person has the good karma for that to happen, then that will happen automatically. Buddhas don't have to, there's no premeditation like that. Okay? Due to the force of their previous munlam, prayers, and all those, what is it? Gewadi, gewokuns, okay? At the end of class. You know, due to all of those piled up, it's just hundup. Hungadupa means it's just automatic. They just show up where people need them, okay? So those are produced by these karmas, which are called the accumulation of merit. It's called sunam tso, okay? The accumulation of merit. So this merit is a very specific kind of good karma that creates your physical body, your two physical bodies when you become a Buddha. Those, incidentally, are the first 3.5 perfections out of the 6. And I'll talk more about that later. Okay, there's 6 perfections. The first 3.5 are especially useful for producing your physical body as a Buddha. Okay? Just that one. Yeah, thanks. Say yeshi. Yeshi ki tso. This is the piling up wisdom. Okay, yeshi means wisdom. Piling up wisdom, karma. It's actually a kind of karma. And this produces your mind. Okay, so we already had the kind of karma that produces your two bodies. And this is the kind of karma that produces your mind. The omniscience of a Buddha. Okay, the ability to know. They know everything that's going on in the universe. Everything that ever went on, everything that will ever go on, and they know it all every second of their existence. They are aware of all things that exist all the time. All things that ever existed, will exist, and do exist now. They know all of them every moment in time. They know everything. They're called omniscient, okay? Are they omnipotent? No, prove it. I'm here, okay? All right, that's all you need, okay? They're either not omnipotent, or they're omnipotent and they're sadistic, okay? All right? Like, they like to see us be in trouble. I mean, there's only two choices, right? They're not omnipotent. They can't do everything, okay? You have to do it. Le jikden natoke. First thing we ever said. You made the world. They didn't make the world. You got to clean it up. They can't do it, okay? So, Yeshi Gitsok produces the mind of a Buddha. So far we got the paradise body of a Buddha is produced by that sunam kitsop, merit collection, merit accumulation. And then there Tulku, their Nirmanakaya, is produced by also Sunam Gitsok, that merit. By the way, there's a difference between Tulku and Chokituku. Say Chokituku. Chokituku. Chokituku means cult classic, meaning Buddha classic. The bump, the long ears, the 112 signs. Okay, that's produced. That's what we call the classic emanation body. Okay, that's the... We got any of them around here? I don't know. Anyway, that's Shakyamuni's typical form, and every enlightened being has the same classical form that they emanate on a planet. That's what we call the classic form. Then there's billions of unclassic forms, which can range from, you know, half-dead dogs up to playboy girls and everything else. Okay, they can do all of that, and they do and the wind going through the trees and the ocean and things like that. They do all of those kind of emanations. Okay, but the classic one is 112 signs, and we're not going to go into that. Does that all that a Buddha is? Two bodies and mind. No, you're missing something. What? The emptiness body, okay, which is called the Svabhavakaya, the chukku, the nature body, okay, the real nature body, okay. What produces that? Trick question.
It's already present.
Yeah, you can't produce it. It's the emptiness of the Buddha. Okay, it's the emptiness of the Buddha. It's the emptiness of the other three bodies. What's that mean? Does that mean like they're empty inside and they have colors outside or something like that? No, it just means that that's also a production of their karma forced on them by their past karma. Okay, that's all. They get to hear an omniscient being talking inside their head because that omniscient being is empty and their karma is forcing them to see him that way. Okay, if their karma slipped a bit, they'd forget something and they wouldn't be omniscient anymore. Okay? So you gotta have emptiness if you're gonna be a Buddha. Okay? You gotta have emptiness. You have that already. Okay? That's the only thing you get to take with you all the way to enlightenment. So we call it Buddha nature. And Buddha nature doesn't mean there's some little guy hiding behind your third rib or something, and you just have to try to squeeze him out. Okay? It's not like that. It's not that you're an enlightened being already and you just didn't figure it out or something. That's just ridiculous. No scripture ever said that. It sounds nice. You can write books about it, stuff like that. It doesn't mean that. Your body, you have five cylinders and one big cylinder. Luckily, that's empty. So that if you collect good enough karma, you could see it differently. You could see it as a Buddha's arm. The emptiness of your arm will be the same when you become a Buddha. It's still the emptiness of my arm. You see what I mean? And you can take it all the way there. That is your Buddha nature. That's the potential for Buddhahood in you. And every living creature has it. Okay? But it's not that you're already enlightened or something like that. That's just a wrong teaching. Nobody ever said that. Okay? It's that you're empty. Okay? If you had better karma, you would see a Buddha. If you had worse karma, you'd see a paw. Right now you have kind of mixed up karma and you see a hand that's getting uglier. Okay? And that's where we are. Okay? That's are the four bodies of a Buddha. Okay? To produce them, you need Sunam Gitsok and Yeshe Gitsok. So at the end of class you say Gewa Di Gewa Kun Sunam Yeshe Tsok Dzog Ching. Okay, that's in your prayers. Okay? And that was written by Arya Nagarjuna. That's a very famous verse by Nagarjuna where he says, I hope everybody could get all the wisdom they need and all the merit they need. Okay? Now, in practical terms, how are you going to do this? This is the 2.5 perfections. Okay? So, to get your body, you need 3.5 perfections. To get your mind, you need 2.5 perfections. To get your emptiness body, what do you need? You need to be alive, okay? You already made it. Okay? You already did it. Congratulations. You have Buddha nature. Okay? You have a mind, you have Buddha nature. Okay? So now all you gotta do is, first 3.5 perfections are gonna make your physical Buddha body. Second 2.5 perfections are gonna make your mind. Okay? How? Let's go through it. I think here it's important. Oh, by the way, those two things together are called Getsa. Say geta.
Geta.
Ge means virtue, tsa means root. People translate it as root of virtue. I hate it. Geta is your karmic bank account. Okay? It's your virtue account. Okay? It's how much virtue you have. All right? Some people have more, some people have less. It's nothing, tsa here doesn't mean rude or elementary or something like that. It just means that's your current Buddha producing bank account, which we can't call karma anymore. Okay? That's something different. You see what I mean? We distinguish between lay, which means karma, and sok, which means, you know, your Buddha producing bank account. Karma is just something that's nice and it wears out after a while. Karma produced your body, that's why it's getting old. Karma produced your dinner, that's why you'll be hungry tomorrow morning. Or tomorrow afternoon if you ate as much as I did. I'll still eat, right? That's the distinction, okay? Dirty karma wears out. Pure karma doesn't wear out. So we don't even call it karma anymore, we call it salt, okay? Now, the big question, you know, you and me want to be Buddhas. We don't want to just do dirty karma, dirty good karma, we want to do Buddha producing karma. So what's the difference? And I have to say, it was very frustrating for me year after year to hear lamas say dirty karma and pure karma and not be able to tell me the difference. You know what I mean? Like, Americans are very practical. Like, when I was doing mathematics in school, they tried to explain to me the theory of everything. I don't care. How do I get the right answer? You know what I mean? Like I'm the kind of kid that would just skip through the whole thing to the end and see how they get the answer. And I don't care about the theory. You know what I mean? If I can get the answer out of this thing, I don't care. Which is maybe not so smart, but anyway. the point is, just get to the bottom line, you know? What's the difference? I want to become a Buddha. I don't want to have ice cream and run out of ice cream over and over again like I've been doing, you know? So what's the difference? Just tell me in plain Tibetan or English, what's the difference, okay? And here's the difference. Go ahead, yeah. For this, you got to talk about say parutu,
parutu.
Chimba.
Chimba.
Parutu,
parutu.
Chimba.
Chimba.
Paru in Sanskrit is para. Tu is Chimba is ita. Okay. And paramita. Okay. Param ita. Okay. Paramita. The perfections. The six perfections. Okay. Why do we call them perfections? Well, there's this thing called generosity, and then there's this other thing called perfection of generosity. If you're generous to people, you'll get money in the future, and it will also wear out, and by the time you die, you'll be back to zero again. Really. That's how it works. Death is the big zero. Death means all the good karma you ever did just suddenly, whoop, runs out at the same time. That's what we call death. Okay? That's not such a big deal to go through your life, you know, building sandcastles and then watching them fall down, okay? We're interested in the other thing, the perfection of giving, okay? Paramita of giving. And that's completely different. You know, you start doing that and then you become a Buddha after a while, okay? That's the kind of thing where you put in less energy and you get out more energy and it snowballs and then you become an enlightened being. So it's very important to know the difference between being a nice guy and being a nice guy as a paramita. Okay, there's completely two different things, okay? By the way, perfection is a good translation. I rarely say that, right? Parotichimba means gone to the other side. Gone to the other side. It means reach the final goal, okay? Now, if you go out and give some dog a piece of bread tomorrow, is that a paramita? Yes, if you do it with the right understanding. Okay, understanding is the difference. If you understand what you're doing and you give a dog a piece of bread, you did the perfection of giving. Now, is it perfect? Hell no. Okay. No, I mean, you're not a Buddha yet and you're still going to suffer the next day. Okay? It's not the perfection of giving. So why do they call it the perfection of giving? It makes you perfect. They should have called it the perfectioner of giving. Okay? It's just a strange name for it, okay? It's not perfect giving. It's giving which is going to make you perfect, so we call it perfection of giving, okay? That's the difference. Now, you can take a break if I just teach you, like, I'll give you one or two cases of the perfections. I'll show you how to do giving without the perfection, and I'll show you how to do giving with the perfection, and then you're just going to always do this kind from now on, right? And then you don't just get ice cream wearing out all the time, okay? You get ice cream forever. And in my Buddha paradise, it's going to be Cherry Garcia. Okay. It's very simple. If you give money to somebody, understanding the emptiness and the karma of the thing, it's a perfection of giving. That's all. Okay? That's all. It's a big difference between, you know, somebody comes up to you and says, will you give me 50 bucks? You say, yeah, here's 50 bucks. You know, it's all I have, but I'll give it to you. That's a noble act. It's not a perfection. It's not a perfection. Okay? But if they come up and say, can you give me 50 bucks? And I say, yeah, you know what? I will give you 50 bucks because the 50 bucks is empty, I'm empty, you're empty. And if I'm very generous to you, then later the wealth will just rain down on me. I'll become incredibly wealthy, I'll become enlightened, and I'll come back and teach you how to do it. How's that? Okay? And if you keep doing stuff that way, that's the perfection of giving. It's very simple, okay? What is it? We call it korsum, by the way, the three elements, you know. I'm giving money to Bad Bolt, you know. So, you know, right now I have to see Bad Bolt as Bad Bolt. Not bad, but no, what I'm saying is that there's these tankas about Jetsun Kapa when he was studying, and he ran into one of his teachers, and the first time they met, they're like, oh man! And the other guy goes, oh man! And he says, what's wrong with you? And he says, I don't see you as Jetsun Kapa, I see you as Manjushri. And he says, you know, the same thing happened to me. I see you as Vajrapani. You know, like they're having this exchange. And in the tanka, they show it, your first meeting, Jetsun Kapa and I forget Umapa, I think. And he's like, he doesn't see a normal monk, he sees Vajrapani, you know. And at the same moment, Umapa sees Jetsun Kapa as Manjushri. And they're having, that's a result of, you know, you see, Bad Bolt's empty. So if I had better karma, I could see him as, you know, Vajrapani, like shining and like that, okay? I mean, I'd like to, okay? So if I had better karma, because he's the same as the pen, he's the same as my arm, okay? So if I give it the pen, if I give him something and say, you know, by giving this, I understand totally that in the future I will see you in that way. And I'm happy to, God bless, I'll give you as much as I can, you know? And even you look at the money and you say, 50 bucks is all I have right now. But if I had different karma, this would be a bar of gold or platinum or uranium or something, you know. I mean, you look at it and you realize, you know, this could have been some other object if I had different karma, you know, or this could be the nectar of immortality, you know. And then I look at my hairy, wrinkly, skinny hand and say, you know, it could have been Manjushri's hand if I had collected better karma. And what it means is, as you give, you think about the emptiness of the person you're giving it to, of the thing you're giving, and the emptiness of you, and the emptiness of the whole situation, you know? We wouldn't have to be in Kathmandu with the electricity going out. We could be in Kathmandu and the whole thing's a big Buddha paradise, you see what I mean? And as you give, you're aware of the emptiness of the thing, you see? I know that you're just a mental image that I'm seeing because my past karma is pretty good, but not perfect, okay? All right? And I'm aware of that, and I'm giving you this money in hopes with the prayer that later I could see everything differently and teach other people how to do it. That's bodhicitta. Okay? Bodhicitta is that. Again, I repeat, bodhicitta is not some Judeo-Christian self, what do you call it? Self-denial. Okay? It's not like that. There is a story about bodhisattvas herding all other living beings into enlightenment and waiting last. They'll be the last in, you know. That's a metaphor for the general attitude you should have about the last cookie and stuff like that. It's not what bodhisattvas really do, and if you think that, you break a bodhisattva vow. Okay? They don't do that. Why? It's ridiculous to postpone your enlightenment if the moment after you get enlightened you can emanate 10 billion bodies and help other people. So what's the use of waiting for 5 minutes? You see what I mean? Who's that going to help? You see, that's just a metaphor. Okay? So the whole thing, your whole mission is to reach total bliss as fast as you can. Because that's the only real way to help other people. You don't have to sit there and say, oh my God, I'm getting rich. Oh my God, people are putting me in the Yak and Yeti in a $350 hotel room, you know. This is terrible, you know. I can't take it, you know. It's not like that. Okay? That's what happens if you keep your vows. That's what happens if you keep your book. Sit back and enjoy it. That's the way it's supposed to happen. It gets better and better and better every week, every year that you keep your vows. And it's not like you're depriving somebody else, okay? That's a new $350. I'm not kidding. You see what I mean? And if you can teach somebody else to do that, they'll be in the room next door. And there'll be another Yak and Yeti next door next year. And there'll be somebody staying there. You see what I mean? You got to get out of the state of mind that wealth is limited or goodness is limited. You see? The idea of Buddhism is each person creates their own Buddha paradise until there's enough Buddha paradises for everybody. See what I mean? Each person is creating new Buddha paradises like that. So it's not like there's a net, oh, I got a Buddha paradise, so you have to take an electrical, what do they call it? Load sharing today. You know? It's not like that. It's not like that. You learn to do the perfections, you get total ecstasy, and on the way there, things get better and better and better, and you can't avoid it, okay? You can't avoid your karma. You can't avoid cancer karma, AIDS karma, or Yak and Yeti $350 hotel room karma. You can't avoid it. It's going to come to you. And it just keeps coming. It just keeps getting better and better. And it's so cool to watch, you know? And it's at no one else's expense, you see? It's just new good karma, new wealth, new beauty coming into the world, and you're producing it with your karma. And then you got to teach other people to do it. You see? That's the whole point. You know, sit there and tell people how to get to Buddha paradise and you're miserable. What's the point? You see? And so get out of that Judeo-Christian thing that you got to get nailed up to. I mean, it might be useful to be nailed up sometimes. And probably you'll get a chance. But generally, it doesn't work that way. Generally, you just keep getting more and more blissed out. By the way, Jesus was probably blissed out at that moment. You just get more and more blissed out until it comes like that, okay? So now you've got the difference between giving, okay? Normal giving, oh, you know, I kind of like you, so here's $50, okay? Enlightened giving, as you hand it to somebody, you say, hey, I'm putting a seed in my mind. Cool. That's going to change my credit card, which is empty, you know, okay? And I'm planting seeds in my mind that are going to cause me to see much more wealth in the future. And I know how it works, and I'm doing it consciously, and here's $50, and when I get rich, every penny I get, I'll use it to help other people. That's very important. That has to be part of the equation. You can't sit there and try to suck the karma for happiness and wealth and health and expect it to work. You gotta be in the back of your mind that I happen to know that this karmic bhakchak seed that I'm putting in my mind today is gonna be worth $5,000 in a couple of weeks or months, okay? I happen to know that. But when I get it, I'm gonna reinvest it in helping other people. You gotta think, then the power is like unbelievable, okay? So it's very interesting. Your life doesn't have to change much. It's your understanding of what you're doing, and that's what makes it a perfection, okay? Now some of the texts say, what's perfection number six? Wisdom. Perfection number six is understanding how to do the first five, okay? But you can't understand number six unless you're doing the first five, because they make the good karma that allows you to understand what I just told you about emptiness. So what comes first, the chicken or the egg? The scriptures say, well, keep doing both, okay? Like study emptiness as much as you can, and that'll help the first five. And then you'll do the first five, and that'll help number six. And there'll be this symbiotic relationship, okay, like that. They will feed each other, okay? So literally, technically, you can't do the first five unless you have number six. But you can't get to number six unless you do the first five. So you got to keep doing both. Maybe you do the first five without them being perfect for a while. And then later you understand how to make them perfect. Okay? But I repeat, the only difference between giving somebody money and it doesn't produce some immediate incredible result is that you're not thinking about what's going on. You don't have wisdom. okay? You don't understand emptiness and karma. If you walk down this aisle and knowingly, out of respect for other people's lives, you move the cushion half an inch, or you move the cushion 3 inches, and while you're down there bent over, you say, I'm doing this because I know it's going to plant a seed in my mind to see my body healthy for the next 10 years, that's cool. And then I'll help other people with that healthy body. That's all. That's the difference between a perfection and not a perfection, okay? I understand that everything's empty. I'm moving this out of the way so somebody doesn't trip on it. And I know that I'm putting a seed in my mind. And as soon as that seed ripens and I see my body getting stronger and healthier, I'll be able to help more people. Maybe I'll be able to stay up all night like Lama Sipa or something like that, okay? And that's all. It's a very tiny attitude change, okay? And it changes your universe. It creates your mandala. It creates your paradise, your Buddha paradise, okay? So just do it, okay? The more mindful you can be moment by moment, the more powerful. That's why the book is just little stuff. It's moving cushions. It's picking up your Coke cup and things like that. Some lady in Ireland, she got up, she said, according to what you said, then I can't do an Irish accent very well. I could just as well stay in my kitchen and get in line. And I said, you got it. You know, you got it. That's true. You don't have to leave your kitchen, you know. Just there with all your kids, you know, and the scones and stuff. You know, I got this scone fetish, okay. But, you know, that's all you have to do. That's all you need to do. And then you'll get in line, okay. But you have to just have that understanding. Okay, one question, we'll take a Coke cup break.
If you forget to do that while you're doing the action, but you remember later, what percentage?
That's a good question. Debbie Bai said, suppose you move the cushion and you forget to think that way. And then on the way out, you remember about it. Now, does the karma get, does it become tsok or le? You see what I mean? Is it Buddha producing karma, or is it just you're gonna, you know, be able to go to the gym one more time? That's a good question.
Rerun the situation in your mind.
Yeah.
Again.
I think if you strongly do it, it would change. I think if you strongly did it, it would change. And I think you could go back and work on the old good deeds you did. Okay, like that. Okay, I believe that most of the energy you would still have. Okay, whatever hadn't already ripened. You could do. By the way, there's a thing about this karma collection stuff. Things get better and better and better, and because you're living with it, you don't notice it. You see what I mean? Like, you're going to be in Bodh Gaya, which is where every Buddha of the 10 directions ever gets enlightened, with Chenrey Sekh, you know, in a couple of days. And you just got out of sitting with the holiest Lama Sopa teacher of Western people who ever lived on this planet, you know, and had personal private teachings from this being, you know what I mean? And you're just used to it. You see, I mean, you don't sit there in awe at night and say, man, I'm the luckiest person in the world. What I mean is the karma kind of sneaks up on you and you get used to it. So that once in a while you have to stop and think, you know, what are the odds I could have personal teaching from Lama Sopa or hear Avalokiteshvara teach Shantideva in the particular spot where every enlightened being ever gets enlightened, you know? I mean, you know, you're more thinking about the mosquitoes and stuff. So what I mean is the karma, sometimes you don't notice how good your karma is getting, and you got to stop sometimes and think about it. Okay, think of where you were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Okay, it's not hard. Have some refreshments, and then we'll talk a little more about Getsa. One quick announcement, okay?
Okay. Quick announcement. The travel agent who's going to be
organizing. I'll give it back to you. We're handing out a thing called 28 ACI correspondence courses. In New York, we've finished the first round of the Geshe course. It took 7 years, and it involves 18. Formal courses and 10 meditation courses. And due to the kindness of one John Stillwell, and one Ora Mames and some Moors and some other people. This stuff is all available on audio tape and notebooks that you can get. A lot of it's available on video, and all over the world people are getting these courses and organizing study groups, like Ian and Giselle from East Australia are here. I think they have like 40, 50 students already in their course, and there are similar courses going on all over the world. So I encourage you to look it over. The people who are actually in charge of the distributing them happen to be here, and you can torture them with orders for the courses you want. Do you want to raise your hands, Michael and Bonnie Moore? Very kindly. They basically work without pay all day long and send out these courses. You get a course, it has 11 tapes, it has a notebook like what you have now, it has homeworks, quizzes. You listen to the tapes, you study the notebook, you send in the homework, it gets lost. You send it in again, it gets given to some guy who never comes back. You send it in a third time, it gets graded, and it comes back to you. Everybody we have is a volunteer, so it's a little bit, we're a little bit overwhelmed. They've sent out last year almost 500,000 pages of stuff, and about something like 15,000 tapes or something. I mean, that's just 1 year's work. They've been doing it for a while. So be patient with it. It's all done by volunteers. We don't charge anything if you don't have any money. For example, we have 150 prisoners take it a year, and we don't charge them anything. So if you don't have money, you can still get them. If you do have money, please pay for them, okay? And I would suggest that you look them over and order what you'd like. On the back side is all these meditation courses. And these are pretty much things that you can sit there and follow the meditation on the tape. And I call it meditation toolbox, meaning that by the time you've gotten through the 10 meditation courses, you'll be able to sit in retreat for 3 years and just, you don't have karma anymore. Which one is that? Okay, you okay? You know, it's important when you meditate to have about 10 different kinds of meditation that you know how to do. You know how to do a death meditation, you know how to do a compassion meditation, you know how to do an emptiness meditation and like that. So that's all detailed on here. You can either write or contact the address that's given on the back. It's a lot faster to talk to the Moors because they're the people that actually do it. Again, if you want to get on the mailing list, there might be courses being offered in your country or in your area. There'll be about, I think, 15 to 20 courses will start in February around the world. Bat Bold is leading one in Mongolia, if you're in Ulaanbaatar, which is, I think it's going to become the next popular Dharma stop. It's really beautiful, fantastic country. 500,000 people watched when we did the Diamond Cutter on TV every night. Bat Bold was translating. And the people are really amazingly beautiful. And the art is better than Nepal, I can say. The art and the sculptures and everything, it's extraordinary, the temples and everything. So Bat Bold's in charge of that there. You can talk to him if you're interested in going there sometime. But like that, the Western Australian crew is here. Salim Lee's Little Spies, and you can talk to them, okay? But anyway, if you want to find out about courses going on, there are about 20 different teachers now who are teaching these courses, and you can hook up with them, okay? Okay. If you want to get on the mailing list, I suggest, can you do that, Michael, also? Okay, talk to Michael Moore also, and at least you'll know if someone's doing a course in your area, okay? All right. I talked about Getsa, meaning your karmic bank account, okay? And what's important to say is that you can blow a Getsa, okay? you can lose all that good karma. Okay, and you have to be careful about it, and you have to know how it can happen. The second homework question here says, describe the kind of person who can lose this most basic virtue, or this, you can blow your karmic bank account. Okay, like there are certain very dangerous actions that you should know about, because you can work for years to collect good karma, and then you can blow it in one big mistake. So you have to know about that. The Abhidhamma Kosha takes a lot of trouble to talk about this subject because it's so dangerous. And Master Shantideva in the Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life does the same thing. So here it is. To really blow your good karma, you have to be a kind of person who is intellectually very strong. Okay? Because what really takes to destroy good karma is a strong attitude. Okay? A strong intellectual viewpoint where you decide that all this stuff is stupid. Okay? Where you decide that all of that stuff, all that thing which that American guy talked about when I was in Kathmandu, I don't believe. You know, I thought about it, and I've come to a very firm decision, it well thought out intellectually, that that's 100% false and can't be true. And just that kind of decisive thinking, you know. You see, you don't have any doubts in your mind. You're not saying, okay, maybe he's right. Maybe it's possible. It's like you get fed up and you say, 100% I decided this is not correct, I'm not going back again, and you make that decision, then you blow your karmic bank account. That does it, okay? And it's you have to keep some kind of, if you decide that this is not your path or this is not for you, at least keep some kind of thing in your mind like, well, maybe it's okay, but I'll get back to it in 10 years or something. You know what I mean? Always keep that kind of open-mindedness. Maitreya said, if you come across a teaching at Kopan Monastery on the 14th day when they got to the 12th hell realm and you decided you didn't think it existed, just put it on a shelf for now. Don't say no. Don't say, I'm sure that hell realm doesn't exist and Lama Supa is spacing out today. Okay? Don't say that. Say, maybe right, maybe wrong. I can't accept it right now. I'll put it in this drawer. I'll put it in this shelf, and I'll come back to that in a year or two. Okay? And always have that attitude about Buddhist ideas. Okay? No matter how strange they seem, say, I'll come back to you later. Or also your lama's activities. You know, if there's something a lama's doing, which is, we call, loi makyawa, means it's beyond your capacity right now. It doesn't seem to you to be possible that that's some kind of extraordinary activity. It looks like that lama really does watch baseball 8 hours a day. And you know, and you're like, it can't be a virtuous thing. It can't be some holy tantric practice, you know. That I can't accept. Just be very careful with that kind of thing. Say, by the way, if you ever sat through a baseball game with Kim Rinpoche, okay? He's sitting there like this the whole time. Like I was watching a really good movie with him one time, and it was about a murder, and there was a lot of, you know, racy stuff in it, I'm watching it, and he's watching it, and then suddenly he says, okay, turn it off. And it's just before we find out who the murderer is, you know? and then I look at him, and I realize he hasn't even been looking, you know, he's been like this the whole time, doing his mantras, he's probably doing some sadhana or something, you know? Like, you don't know, it's beyond your mind, okay? So just leave it for now, say, maybe that lama's crazy, maybe not, but right, I'll just leave that right now. Okay, so that way you don't develop the kind of attitude that destroys your own karma. Okay, if the lama is doing something wrong or something, they're gonna suffer a lot from that. You know, you can be sorry for them later or something, but in the meantime, just shelve it. Say, I don't understand that. Maybe it's something incredible. Let's just leave it for now. I'll come back to it later. But don't decide that this is this. Some kind of baseball addict or something. Okay, don't make a decision in your mind that what you see is all that's going on. Okay. Question 3 says: describe 2 actions which can cause you to lose your karmic balance. Okay. First one I talked about already. It's having a wrong view, like saying it's impossible that there are future lives. It's impossible that karma works, okay? That's the first way. Second way is to have very strong anger towards a bodhisattva, okay? That destroyed, like if you got angry at Lama Sopa. Now that takes protracted, strong anger, okay? Like if you have a bad day at Koppan, and it's 3 a.m., and he doesn't seem to be slowing down, and you're like thinking, you get like angry for a few minutes. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking like over a sustained period of time, like weeks or months, you maintain this kind of very strong anger at a bodhisattva, okay? Or even if it's a shorter period, but it's a very, very powerful state of anger. You know, like almost malice or something, almost hatred towards this person. Not because your knees are sore or something like that, okay? But you just feel bad about very strong anger directed at this, decided that this is a bad person and you're angry towards them. Then you destroy your entire credit balance, okay? Just like all my credit cards. Okay. Abhidharma, number four question says, what are the two methods given in the Abhidharma to get your credit card back? Okay, how do you build the balance back? You can, okay? Like you can fix that kind of mistake, okay? And there's two ways. First one is simply by deciding that maybe this stuff is true. That's enough. Maybe I was wrong. Okay, you don't even have to go to the Lama and say, oh, now I accept karma, you know, and put your hand on top of the sutra, you know, and you don't have to do that. If honestly, inside you say, maybe that Lama is really doing something in front of that television that I don't understand. You know, maybe something's going on here that I really don't understand. Maybe karma really does work. Maybe everything around me was made by karma. Maybe I really could become a tantric deity in this lifetime. Then that's enough to get all that stuff back, okay? It restores it, okay? That's kind of cool. The second method is to be sure that it about those viewpoints, okay? Like you burst into the Lama's room without knocking, the New York Mets are on, and you look at the chair and there's Vajrapani sitting there. And then that's called positive. You know, he wasn't looking at the men's, okay? And you're like, okay. So it's either what we call tetsam, which is suspicion that you're wrong, or ngepa or tsema, which means definite perception that you're wrong, okay? And either one, just a suspicion that you're wrong, or some kind of belief that maybe this could be something special going on, or a direct perception, you know, oh, I get it. You know, you catch them as they are, you know, and then then all your karma is restored. That gets out is restored. Okay. Yes. She said, "Can you only have the second type if you've had a direct perception of emptiness?" No, you can have it before that. It's just a definite. By the way, you can have tantric realizations before you see emptiness directly. Okay, you can meet tantric deities before you see emptiness directly. But if you do see emptiness directly, your tantric practice takes off like a million times stronger. Okay, so tantra and seeing emptiness are very good friends. Seeing emptiness is a very fertile field, and the whole success of your tantric practice depends on understanding emptiness. Okay. Last thing here is, I have to write one, that's your last question. Let me see, do I have that or you have that? Okay. By the way, somebody got really sick and said, I heard that could be purification, okay? It is true. We're gonna talk about it in Bodh Gaya. The Diamond Cutter Sutra talks about how if you start to study emptiness, and if you start especially to understand the connection between the karma in your mind and emptiness and how karma in your mind makes you see things, then it's very likely that you will start to have some problems, okay? The Diamond Cutter Sutra says, and I quote directly, you will suffer and you will suffer greatly, okay? So you should be happy. If you're in a course like this and you get a bad cold or you get a nice flu or some very holy diarrhea. Okay, you can be happy. That's like purification. Okay. So don't worry. Be happy. Be happy about it. And it'll go away. And it's a sign that a lot of really heavy karmas have been wiped out from your mind stream. So you should, you know, better that than a car accident or cancer or going to a hell realm or something like that. Okay. And that's direct from Lord Buddha. I didn't make that up. Okay. Say penje.
Penje.
Dzogche.
Dzogche.
I also don't mean that you should go eat everything that's offered to you. You can't force the purification like that. Okay. Say penje.
Penje.
Dzogche.
Dzogche.
Penje.
Penje.
Dzogche.
Dzogche.
These are two more kinds of karma that you should know about. Okay. These are from the Abhidharma, and that's the last thing we're going to talk about tonight. Penje means projecting karma. Sometimes they call it shooting karma. This is the karma which throws you into your next life, okay? They compare it in the scriptures to the master tanka painter who sketches out the tanka. Like if you saw the cover of the Garden Book, that was roughed out by the greatest tanka master in Mongolia. Then we kneaded it in 3 days, and he had two other master painters sitting next to him filling in the grass and stuff. The grass, you know, the grass strokes and stuff like that. They are called Dzogche. Okay? Dzogche means finishing karma. That finishes off the details. Okay? Dzogche means the karma which finishes off the details. And then Penje is the karma that throws you into a birth. And you can have different combinations of Penje and Dzogche. For example, if you have a lousy Penje and a good Dzogche, you could be my lama's dog, Doma. Okay? Like she has a very bad Penje Kile. She has a bad throwing karma, projecting karma. It threw her into a life as an animal. She cannot intellectually grasp what you've been taught this week. Okay, so probably she can't achieve enlightenment if she's not enlightened already. Dzogche means, but the finishing karma, the detail karma, to sit there and be fed by a holy lama, the holiest lama in the universe, you know, he sits there and peels the chicken for her and then breaks it into little pieces and asks her to take bite by bite. This is a pretty good Dzogche. Okay, so... So those are the two things. Then the opposite would be someone's born as a human, but they're born into a very, you know, very severe poverty or with a handicap or something like that. Like the Penje is good, but the Dzogche, the finishing karma, is not so good. Okay, something like that. And you can imagine cases where both the Penje and the Dzogche are wonderful, which means you. And then where Penje and Dzogche are both lousy, which would be like an animal that doesn't get fed by my lama or something like that, okay? So those are that's the last division of karma that you should learn about. We're going to talk tomorrow about a special way of, you know, today we pretty much covered how to take care of your future karma. Like, you know how to keep your book. By the way, please really do try to make a few entries tonight, and then tomorrow somebody will, you know, you can discuss them with one of the students tomorrow during the, between the classes, okay? But I think now we have to talk tomorrow about, is there any way to get rid of all the old bad karmas you did when you didn't know what you were doing? Like, I don't know about you, but I think one of the advantages I have over the other monks in the monastery is that up until age 30, I raised hell. You know what I mean? Like, I did everything. And it was not just irresponsible hell raising. I was seeking happiness and pleasure. And I tried everything. Bad Bullet can tell you the same thing. We used to compare notes. You know, truly seeking happiness. In the pursuit of happiness, tried different things, did different things, many different things. And then, you know, after becoming a Buddhist and finding out about, maybe some of them were kind of pretty bad karma. Some of them involved some pretty heavy bad karma. So then I have to find out, is there any method to remove that old bad karma? Because it doesn't matter how much good karma I make now, I still got all that loads of bad karma in my karmic pocket, you know? And this is a teaching by a student of Jetsun Kapa named Kerubje, which was his tantric master disciple. I mean, not to say that Gelsopje wasn't a tantric master, but Kerubje was a real master. And he taught a very beautiful method to destroy all bad karma, based on a sutra by Lord Buddha, and using a special fire offering, using a special kind of fire that you can make in your own home. Okay, and I'm going to show you, there's a little kit that we've made. You can kind of copy that kit. You're going to bring yours, right? Yeah. And then you can see how to do this special, it's like this special little fire thing that you do by yourself. You know, I like to do it on the beach. I like to do it in the mountains. I like to do it in my room at night. And it's a way to get rid of some of your old bad karma. Of course, a fire is not enough, right? You've got to have some kind of special meditation connected to the fire. So it's a kind of like a fire meditation. And I'll teach it to you tomorrow, okay?